Peter Taylor is here with us from the Berkshire Taconic Community Station.
I love Peter Taylor, the writer. You know, I knew him. I told you that, right?
Are you a name dropper? I never knew that.
Well, it's not hardly dropping a name. Not many people know who he is. It's not like, do you know who Peter Taylor? You do. You want to get up close to the mic and actually?
Sure.
There you go. Peter Taylor was a great Southern writer who taught at University of Virginia when I was there.
Yes, and actually I followed Peter Taylor around because he also spent some time at Kenyon College.
Oh, yeah, definitely. He went to Kenyon College.
Yeah, and at University of the South and at UVA. And
that's
I went to two out of the three of those institutions, and I interviewed at the third. So I followed him around a little bit.
Oh, so you went to Swanee and you went to Kenyon.
I went to Kenyon, and I went to graduate school at UVA. And,
so did I. What did you go in?
Education, master's in education.
The Curry School.
The Curry School. You have a, absolutely.
Yeah.
Sounds
I was there
like
7 years, 8 years.
A food sort of place.
Oh, that's funny, Ellen.
You have to pardon me. I'm not quite awake.
No, yeah, it was really funny. So, what year were you in UVA?
What's that?
What time, what period?
I was at UVA from...
Stay on the mic.
I'm sorry. I was at UVA. I'm trying to think back here, Tom. I was from UVA from 91 to 94.
Okay, I was gone. But I see you got the clothing...
the look, yeah.
The look.
You shedded the look.
Yeah, No, it's true. When I came to Hudson, I had that look, and people were like, no, lose the khakis.
Do you mean
lose
the penny loafers? The beanie that says UVA?
Yeah, that was what, no. The khakis and penny loafers look. I was just told to shorten it.
It's a good look.
It is a good look.
And in Hudson, anything goes, as
that's
you probably
right.
know.
Anyway, so you're not that Peter Taylor, but that's not a disappointment because you're the one who gives out money.
Well, Community Foundation helps others give away money. And okay. So we are, that's the business that we're in, indeed.
Tom, let's start by asking Peter to tell us, or let's
yeah, why don't
ask
you go
Peter.
Ahead. Why don't you go right ahead, Ellen?
I like to work through.
Yeah, no, that's cool.
Now that you're warmed up.
To explain, especially to our listening audience, just what a community foundation is, because it's my understanding that in government language, I suppose, in the designation of foundations and what makes a foundation, that will grant tax exemption to the people that are giving or donating money, and there are other kinds, and the Community Foundation is one of them, is it not?
Well, we are a public charity, like most nonprofits are, but let me back up. And first of all, I want to thank Tom and Ellen for having me in today to be able to share a little bit about the Berkshire Taconic Community Foundation and also some interesting work that's underway at the foundation to both meet some pressing needs that are occurring right now in Columbia County, but also, you know, some work that we've done to better understand the issues, trends, and needs across our entire region. Ellen, you're right. We, the Community Foundation is about helping strengthen communities, and we do that through philanthropy primarily, but also through leadership activities that we engage in. We are a 501c3 public charity, as most nonprofits are. And what
can I back up a second? What you said across the region. How do you define the region?
Oh, thank you, Tom. Berkshire Taconic's region includes all of Columbia County, all of Berkshire County in Massachusetts, part of Northwest Connecticut in Litchfield County, and also part of Northeast Dutchess in Dutchess County. And so it's a funky configuration. Mm-hmm. It really is a region that is defined in part by the counties that come together in the three-state axis right there. But it also shares that beautiful ridgeline of ours, the Taconic Mountains. And there's some commonalities in the assets, in the strengths, in this region, in the communities that have been here for a long time.
And what is the source of the funds that you work with?
We are, as a community foundation, what we do is that we work with individuals, families, and nonprofit organizations and community groups to establish and grow charitable funds that serve the community. And so we have funds that support the arts and the environment and youth. We have funds that support individual nonprofit organizations. We have funds that support communities and regions.
And these funds are managed by you?
We are.
Develop? Okay.
What we do, to your point, we accept gifts from individuals and groups, and we acknowledge those, and so there's a tax exemption, and we pool them together.
I should probably announce that you have done that for the station. Is that not correct?
I'm sure we have been involved with the WAVE, both
sure
helping build the charitable resources to enable you to do what you want to do, but also as a grant maker as well. And so we work with individuals, families, and groups to use philanthropy to achieve various purposes in the community. And so so we pool that. And what a community foundation allows individuals, families, and groups to do is that we pool that together, and we're able to do a couple things collectively that it's hard for individual funds to do separately. We're able to, first of all, provide a lot of knowledge about the community, because the fees that we assess on the funds under management allows there to be a professional staff that works with volunteers, and through that work we get to know a lot about the region that we're serving, and we can bring that knowledge to bear to the funds when they're doing their grant making and their scholarship work. We also are able to do just back office work. We're able to accept the donations and make grants when they are directed. But we also are able to pool those resources together and have a much more sophisticated investment strategy that allows those funds to go to work. And so we can, through the return on those investments, have more money for grant making. And so that's the real value of the Community Foundation.
So you really, excuse me, Tom, but in a sense, manage the funds, which they sometimes rely on you for advice on how those funds are going to be spent. And sometimes do the donors to the Community Foundation funds stipulate what those funds are to be used for? They know what they're going to be used for as they're coming to you.
Absolutely. And
so it's both ways.
The intent of the donor is very important. In fact, we often are the recipients of bequests when people are thinking about what type of legacy they want to leave in the community. They look to the Community Foundation to be a partner in that. And so if we receive a bequest, let's say, to support
radio stations.
Thank you. Much more appropriate of example. There might be listeners out there that are thinking about that right now. Radio stations in Columbia County or youth in Hudson, if we get those instructions, we get that directive with a bequest, our currency is really honoring that that intent and making sure that there's high value use of those resources over time.
But I've also read, in fact, in a New York Review of Books article by Judge Rakoff, that there's no real requirement to do that. Is that correct?
Well, what the board of Berkshire Taconic has a responsibility to do is to honor the intent of the donors. What we do have the ability to do is, if the stated purpose of the funds no longer exists, let's say we have funds to support an organization that goes away, that meets its mission, no longer exists, then the board does have the ability to transfer that intent to a like situation.
And how much of your donations do you, you say you're developing a fund, and then the money you make off the investments of that fund or what you spend.
Let me give you an illustration of just the funds that we have. Under the Berkshire Taconic Community Foundation, we have 550 funds that have been set up over the 30 years that we've been in existence. Some of those funds are, $10,000 in size. Some of them are in the millions of dollars. Some of them are focused, as I shared, either on specific purposes. And we also have funds that have been set up by donors and individual donors and families that really operate as mini foundations for them. And they work with the foundation to pursue their philanthropy. We also manage nonprofit endowments. As I said, we have a large scholarship portfolio. In the aggregate, that's about $135 million. And so we pool that together and we invest it on the behalf of all those funds. And then the returns are then distributed across those funds, and they add to the grant-making power of those individual funds. And so collectively, those individuals, families, and groups can do a lot more working with and through the Community Foundation.
So if you're giving money to Berkshire with one goal in mind, does it come from the larger pool, or do you just get back, or do you just direct what your percentage of the investment is?
if I understand your well, actually,
could you
we're getting into the weeds here, Tom, but I welcome the opportunity. There are funds.
I just happened to have read this very critical article about the.
When you set up a fund or when a fund is set up, one of the distinctions is it an endowed fund, mm-hmm. meaning is it there in perpetuity to fulfill that purpose, mm-hmm. or is it a fund that can spend both the income from the investments as well as the principal?
Right.
Then so they can spend it down if they wish, or the cause can spend it down as they wish. We have about 52% of our assets are endowed, and the other 49% are non-endowed.
Okay.
Do you have any kind of set percentage or fee, management fee, that you take from those funds?
We do. That is actually how the operation works, we have a fee schedule, and we charge administrative fees on the fund to support the operations of the foundation. And then we also, in our investment portfolio, we have to pay for the services of those that are investing the money directly. And so those are funds that you typically experience with most financial products.
Right. Does the investment advice come from in-house, or do you outsource that
We have actually we have an investment committee that's mm-hmm. charged by the board to steward the investment portfolio.
Gotcha.
We have investment policies that determine a mix of asset classes mm-hmm. that the investment committee works from. That investment committee works with an investment consulting firm called Prime Buckholz. It's a national firm that works mostly with institutional endowments like foundations and colleges. And they work with the investment committee to identify the individual underlying investments that the money goes to. And so we have funds in fixed income, mm-hmm. in global equity, domestic equity, hedge funds, a diversified investment portfolio that allows us to maximize the return on the investments, but also to do that with a minimum degree of risk, and also what's called downside protection, meaning that we're not looking to max out on a high market, but we want to do well. But we also, if the markets start to go down, we want some protection in terms of the extent to which our losses will be.
Is there a sense that you invest consistent with your other missions, with your goals as a foundation?
We actually have we look at our, in terms of social responsible investing. We have a pool for socially responsible investing that donors can opt into.
I see.
And then we have our primary investment pool that the goal of that is, again, return with a minimum degree of risk and downside protection.
I've always been curious about those socially conscious investment pools. Do they perform as well?
They do, actually. Okay. Our SRI pool last year did as well as our primary pool.
Good to know.
So let's start talking about what they actually do, other than how they manage their money.
I thought, well, now that we know that.
That's important. So many nonprofits and everything, you got to wonder how the money, you get some of these mailings, for example, from the better known nonprofits, out there. I'm not going to name names, but, it seems like they spend most of their money on mailings. You have to know how this is being managed. It's
and
important.
Also the people behind the management.
Right.
I think one of the things that a community foundation, especially Berkshire Takana, can do, can attract really top-flight people to mm-hmm. serve on our board. We were just talking about investments, and I don't want to hold that up above other aspects of our work, but since we were just talking about it, we have an investment committee that has some of the best financial investment thinkers in New York that mm-hmm. See this as a way to be involved in an organization that's strengthening in a region that they really care about.
Sure.
Well, let's start, if we could, with the Columbia County Fund. Don't you have a special fund set up for investing or for giving grants in Columbia County?
We do indeed. We have the Fund for Columbia County, and that fund is set up to support communities and organizations in Columbia County. That's the intent of that fund. That will be forever the intent of the fund. And so if a donor supports it, they know that those resources will forever go to Columbia County. It is we have an advisory committee made up of community leaders from across the county. Joyce LePen from Hillsdale is the chair. And that committee works with the foundation to both do the grant making, how the funds are used, but also work with us to build that fund. And so it can be a permanent resource for Columbia County. That fund today is about $3.4 million, and it awards $35,000 a year in grants. You know, a great example of a grant that the Fund for Columbia County just made was, you know, two blocks away or three blocks away here at the Hudson Opera House. They have a neat program with the Department of Youth that that supports hip hop dancing among high school students. And we just provided a $5,000 grant to the Hudson Opera House to expand that program. It's successful. They have a high degree of demand among local young people to learn that type of dance, and so they're expanding it. We're providing them some seed capital to do that expansion, and so they can offer an advanced level dance class because they have a number of kids that have gone through the introductory level, and also the youth are going to perform in that beautiful space that has just been opened.
Excuse me for interrupting a second, but the phrase seed capital reminds me, folks, we need a little bit of our seed capital, 697-7400. We're still in the pledge drive, so please call in. Or go to wgxc.org/donate. We need some seed capital ourselves.
Well, Tom, I think, you know, this pledge drive, I think, is a nice illustration of the power of many people coming together to support something. And we're talking about the Community Foundation today. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the resources that I've been talking about have literally come from thousands of donors. And so they have all contributed what they can to enable that to the Community Foundation to grow. And similarly, it's every little bit helps.
And I'm sure you probably know that this station is completely community based. I mean, we have very little programming that comes from afar, very selective about what we take. And that is only to make up the space for what can't be generated locally. And that's partly because we don't have the funds to generate more locally, which we'd love to do.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, obviously to just talk a little bit about what you do, which I think is so important. I mean, when you think in today's age in terms of how important it is for people to have information to make good decisions, information mm-hmm. about what's going on in the community so they can be engaged, knowledgeable citizens. It's so important. As well as you do a lot of just, you know, around entertainment, making sure. Local artists be better known, new work.
Ellen is the most entertaining person I know. Now, speaking
of... You do comedy, too.
It depends on what one thinks of as entertainment,
yes.
I think.
So the Columbia County Fund is roughly $35,000 a year you give out. Are they mostly grants in the $5,000 range,
yeah.
That kind of thing?
They're small grants with the idea that it puts neat things in motion that mm-hmm. Allow nonprofit groups and community groups. Often we support things that are completely volunteer-driven to give them a little bit of resources to make good ideas come to be.
And we used to call those seed groups. And I know a woman who runs a fund called America the Beautiful Fund. Are you familiar with that?
I should be, but I'm not, Ellen.
And people would call her and say, we're looking for seeds to plant our community garden. And so she started giving seeds to, you know, with the help of seed companies.
Oh, okay.
What was the original idea?
I can't remember. Somehow to beautify,
okay.
I guess.
Sure.
Anyway, she ended up giving seeds.
Yeah, that's
nice. You know, oftentimes it's hard to, you know, raise that first infusion of money for a new idea. Yeah. And, you know, one of the ways that I like to think about small grants is it's really kind of the risk capital. And philanthropy isn't a great opportunity to take risks and to bank on really local leaders that have good ideas and just community groups that are coming together to try to solve an issue. And that little bit of money can go a long way.
Mm-hmm.
To what extent do you fund anything that has, I wouldn't say a political dimension, but more of a dimension of, you know, the nuts and bolts infrastructure in local communities, things like that?
Say more about what you mean by infrastructure,
well,
so I don't assume.
Let's say a Columbia County community has a problem with sidewalks. Is that the kind of project that would ever be on the agenda for the fund?
As a seed, you know, I think, you know, let's just take that as an example. I think what and I don't want to speak for the Fund for Columbia County, because there's a group of volunteers that really think about the best use of those funds based on the proposals that they receive. But you know, I think a couple things that the Fund for Columbia County really cares about, and that is collaboration. The extent to which individuals and groups are coming together to do something collectively. They put up a priority on funding projects that are collaborative. And so in your example, if it was a group of community volunteers in a neighborhood that were looking to do something to beautify, make it more accessible, make it more walkable, and they were, you know, partnering with a nonprofit or even the municipal government, and they needed some money for equipment or concrete so they could do that work.
Well, that's another thing. Does the fund prefer, as they say, shovel-ready projects, or can you come with something that's still in the very hypothetical stage?
You know, as I shared, you know, oftentimes a fund like the Fund for Columbia County is the first money in for a new idea. Sure. I think what, and again, I don't want to speak for the Fund for Columbia County if any volunteers are out there listening to this, but, you know, typically when you're looking at those types of proposals, I found committees look at the strength of the idea, the feasibility of the idea, the strength of the people that are behind it in terms of not so much that they are established and have expertise, but they really have a clear idea. They've developed a work plan. They have a sense of how it's going to all come together. You know, oftentimes they're, you know, community foundation, Berkshire Taconic funds, an idea that comes from a group that's doing something for the first time. But it's the strength of the people behind it. It's the conviction they have it. It's, again, you know, are they collaborating with organizations that have like-minded missions that are bringing resources together? Those are the types of things that we look for. Mm-hmm. I often think, you know, that the value of small grants is that it puts things in motion. And yes, it's about a discrete project or an initiative, but it's also about building relationships from the process of designing and implementing a project. And it's often those relationships that occur during that community work that is the most enduring outcome of that grant, because those volunteers know each other better, they've accomplished something together, they've learned about their community, and those relationships allow them to go on and do more things, either within that existing committee or organization, or when they meet up to do other community projects. I mean, they're great relationship builders, and that type of social capital. We've been talking a lot about financial capital, but that social capital is so important in terms of building trust and reciprocity in a community, and we all know how important that is.
Do you, this leads me to ask, when you're talking about sidewalks, do you fund government entities? I mean, if the city of Hudson had an idea to involve the neighborhood, for example, in getting sidewalks replaced in a certain part of town or something, do you accept government funds into the foundation, and would you fund a project that came from a government request?
I mean, we could, if a government wanted to provide resources into our WANA funds, yes, we could accept those resources. On the first question,
I mean,
that
I
you
doubt
raised,
that they would do that.
we're able to. On the other point, yes, a municipal entity, government entity, is eligible for a tax-exempt grant, so we can support a government unit. I think one thing, and this is a generality and it's not specific to the Fund for Columbia County, I think typically donors and foundations want to make sure that philanthropic dollars are not replacing dollars that a government typically would put into something.
Yeah.
And so there's often that consideration that would come into a decision.
Right. Well, where are we? Oh, we were talking about the Columbia County Fund. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's just one example. Again, I said that, you know, as I shared, you know, Berkshire Taconic Community Foundation has 550 funds that have, you know, not all of them are $3.4 million with 35,000, but all of them have people, residents behind them that care deeply about this region, care deeply about Columbia County, and they are trying to give back and to be part of the community through their philanthropy. And we help that process, and we help them, we add value to that process.
So how does one apply for a Berkshire Taconic Grant.
You go to our website and you look for the Fund for Columbia County and you
other
click
fund,
that
there,
up. Yeah,
all the funds are listed.
Yeah, not all our funds offer competitive processes, meaning you can apply in a given time of the year for support. But many of them do. We have, like the Fund for Columbia County, that has active volunteers. We have about 70 of those committees that we support, everything from geographic funds like the Fund for Columbia County that cover a set of communities, or in the case of Columbia County, the entire county. But we also support scholarship committees. We support
grants too, right?
We do. We have education enrichment funds in every single school district in our county. In fact, we partnered over the years with the Ellsworth Kelly Foundation to grow those funds. And so there could be permanent resources for enrichment activities in the schools related to arts and culture.
Well,
Ellen, do you have somebody you want to get money for? Or some entity?
No.
Okay.
Yo, let me share, you know, because we're in Hudson and we're in Columbia County. Let me share, you know, because we've been talking about the Fund for Columbia County, and that's really that work with volunteer committees is really the heart and soul of what the Community Foundation do. But I've also mentioned that we work with individual donors and that have funds at the foundation, and we work with them to pursue their philanthropy. And there are two projects that are active in Columbia County that I think are great stories of the magic of the Community Foundation and the generosity of donors that are here in Columbia County. We are about a year into two initiatives that are made possible by a very generous anonymous donor couple in Columbia County. Two of their passions include early literacy, helping kids become better prepared to enter kindergarten and be successful in school, especially kids that come from low-income backgrounds. Another passion of theirs is access to fresh and healthy food, especially, again, for low-income families and seniors. And so they started working with the foundation about 2 years ago, and they have committed to both of those initiatives. In each case, they have committed $750,000 over 5 years to support to provide that level of support to both initiatives. And so what we did with them, in partnership with them, is that we have, in both cases, really tried to understand the context of both of those issues in Columbia County. So we commissioned research. We wanted to do this in a data-driven way. We wanted to understand both what were the trends around these issues, but also what were the organizations doing really good work in this area. So we wanted to know the issues. We also, in both initiatives, convened those organizations and individuals that were doing work related to both of those issues. And so in separate convenings, we brought together the local experts to share what we had learned through our research, but to also hear from them, A, how they react to that research, what does that look like on the ground, but what were the promising strategies they were seeing in their work, and what was the role of philanthropy? These resources that can be flexible, can be used for a variety of purposes to really help move the needle on that issue. And so let me give you just briefly, we're about a year and a half into both. In the access to fresh and healthy food, we're partnering with two organizations. What we found through our research in the convening is if we wanted to increase access to fresh and healthy food, especially for lower income families, we need to look at it both on the supply side and on the demand side. We need to really tap the local markets to try to get more fresh and healthy food to low-income families. But we also recognized that we needed to increase the demand. We needed to show and help teach and support and coach kids to see how they could incorporate healthy ingredients into their diet. And so we have two partners, two great organizations that I think your listeners should know, or hopefully know and should know. On the supply side, we're working with Hawthorne Valley Association, the Hawthorne Valley Farm, that has been doing a couple things over the last year. One, when they had been participants in the convening work, they thought, for us to really look at the supply issue, we need to hear more from residents. We need those people that we were trying to reach, they were trying to reach. And so they have been working over the last year with a core group here in downtown Hudson, a diverse core group, and they have surveyed local residents. They have tried to ascertain with that group what were opportunities to create greater access to fresh and healthy food. And so it's been very resident-driven in Hudson, and they have been on point in terms of organizing, mobilizing those residents. They experimented with a fresh fish market down on Warren Street as a way to connect families that are in the orbit of downtown to fresh fish. They learned that through their surveys and through their work. And so that's just an example of how they are both the process that they are using, but also the types of things that are doing. So, and then on the demand side, and then I'll quickly move through it, we're working with the Sylvia Center, which is a organization in Columbia County, and they also work in New York City. And what they do really well is they teach culinary skills to young people. They do it in schools. They do it in after-school programs. And they're working with the Hudson After-School Program, and they've had phenomenal interest and participation among kids in the after-school program to learn cooking skills with health, fresh and healthy food. And then what the Sylvia Center does is that it provides a food share to these kids to take home fresh food to their homes, and so they can cook with their parents. And that hopefully is giving both the skills and the knowledge, and so they can be good consumers.
Those are great programs. What I wonder is what from a contributor point of view, why not just make your donation directly to these groups?
To in terms of if you're thinking about your charitable giving, your philanthropy,
right?
Absolutely, you can.
But I'm that was kind of set up for you to say like, what is the value?
Yeah,
the value of
let's just take a donor advised fund. A donor-advised fund is a fund that's typically set up by an individual or family. What they are able to do is they're able to make a gift to their fund, and then they're able to make grants over a couple of years from that gift. They also have the ability to give anonymously, which is often important in small communities, is they're able to give through. And then I said, they are able to, in the case of the initiative, which is, a significant initiative for the donor and for this community, they're able to work with staff that have an expertise in terms of how you think about solving these problems.
Has that ever happened where someone wants to make a major donation, comes to you for advice, and then goes ahead on their own with a project?
Oh yeah, I mean, we're very accessible, and we talk to both donors that are interested in terms of how they pursue their giving, that end up not setting up a fund or making a gift through the community foundation or to the community foundation. And similarly, we talk a lot with nonprofits as they are approaching new projects in terms of how they can access the funding necessary to do the work they want to do, and hopefully they find opportunities to connect with funds at the community foundation. Not all the time that they do, but we brainstorm and we hopefully give them some ideas of places that they can go to find the funding that they need.
Do you ever advertise in a sense that funds are available and that you want to give grants of a certain kind?
I think there was a piece in the Register just today.
Today?
Yes.
Yeah, we do. We have a communications department that's the knitting that they do all the time, is send out information to local media partners who put it in the paper. And we also try to spotlight the grants that have made from a variety of funds, both to share the stories of how philanthropy is making a difference, but also to hopefully attract future applicants to our grant programs. One of the things that's so important in the work that I have the privilege of doing is that, you know, the real magic of the work is done by nonprofit organizations and community groups. And it's so important for us to be able to connect what we do with what they do. And so we are able, but they need to know about us to be able to partner with us.
Do you feel an obligation to keep your paid staff lean?
We always are looking at how we can do our work as efficiently as possible.
So you did an assessment, an assessment study, a survey, a something to
we
look.
Did.
Tell us
you're
more
nice
about
to
that.
Ask, and you know, actually, you're,
I can't
you're getting
find
a,
the words to ask.
We we did a community assessment last year into the beginning part of this year, and actually, I can share a sneak preview on the findings because we are going to be releasing next week a report on the findings from this community assessment. This community assessment, really, the goal of it was twofold. One, was for us to get a better understanding of the issues, trends, and the needs in the community, and so we could build our knowledge as a foundation. And that's important in our work with donors and also in our work with nonprofits. And so we wanted to create an information resource that was valuable to our partners. And we're also using it to sharpen our strategic direction. And so the foundation can identify a set of issues that are pressing to the region where philanthropy can make a difference, and where the foundation can play a leadership role in working with others to address that issue. We're still in the midst of our strategic planning process, but we are ramping up to share our findings because there's value in the broad array of issues that we explored. And I'll share a couple. Let me share a little bit about the process. Because
and
I
this
think
is region-wide?
This is across our four counties.
Do you include Greene County? You don't go that far.
No, Greene County is not part of the region that we serve.
Right. I just thought I'd ask because they're part of our region.
Yeah, you might have listeners in Greene County.
Yeah, we do, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Don't you think so, Tom?
Oh, yes. I know we do.
So, you know, a little bit about process that I think is important to note. And then I'll quickly share a couple of findings. You know, the process, we wanted to listen carefully to the community in terms of what they thought were the most pressing issues, needs, and trends in the community. So we did a lot of outreach. And in total, through focus groups and surveys, we got over 2,300 viewpoints from residents, from our donors, nonprofit partners, and civic and business leaders. We held a focus group at Columbia Green Community College. We also held a focus group at the Art School in Ghent to really pull together to hear directly from them. We also did surveys to collect viewpoints from people that weren't able to attend focus groups. We also looked a lot at the quantitative data. We wanted to look at what existing reports and data sets told us about the issues, trends, and needs in the community. And there are a couple of interesting findings, and I'll just give you a snapshot. And these are findings that, A, probably won't be a surprise to any of your listeners, and B, I think they are issues that many, if not most, rural communities are facing. You know, one, the demographics are changing across the region, including Columbia County. I mean, simply, we're getting older, there are fewer of us, and our communities are getting more diverse. I think it's interesting, you know, two data points I think are interesting to highlight demographic change. One is that there has been, since 2000, a 12% decrease in the school population. At the same time, there's been a 35% increase in the ownership of homes by part-time residents. And so you have that. I think those two data points show that there's a decline in full-time residents, especially families with young kids, and an increase in part-time residents. And I think the part-time resident community is one of the many strengths in this region. The part-time residents often are very involved in their communities. They are generous to organizations that they care about, and they really consider this a big part of their home. Having said that, they're not here 12 months out of the year. And demographic changes do have implications in terms of, you know, what we do at town meeting and the way, you know, the issues that we choose to care about together. So the demographic are changing. You know, I think a positive statistic in my mind is since 2000, there's been a 37% increase in immigrants into Columbia County. And I think that is a real source of strength. If you look up and down Warren Street, there are many businesses that have been started and are being run by immigrant families. They are often younger and they have kids. I think we need to do all that we can to help immigrants fully participate in the community and in the economy. And so that's a positive trend. So demographic changes is a finding that we've had. Alongside that, there has been increasing income inequality in the region. just to give you a sense, you know, in Columbia County, the poverty rate's around 10%. In Berkshire County, it's 12%. And nationally, it's about 14% in rural regions. What's concerning is that that 10% was 9% 5 years ago. So it's not going in the right direction. Another striking statistic that in Columbia County, 43% of renters are considered cost burdened, which is a term that means that over 30% of your income is spent on housing, which is not seen as sustainable. So affordable housing is a really important issue. We did a resident survey, and one of the questions we asked is, you know, if you were considering moving, what were the reasons that would prompt you to move? And the number three response was that it's an expensive place to live, only matched by not available jobs and jobs. Jobs was number one, and career advancement was number two. And so there's increasing income inequality. If you think about increasing levels of poverty and also increasing affluence, you know, there's concern about the hollowing out of the middle class. The third issue that I think helps address the first two that I mentioned is that the predominant issue that came out in the data, in our focus groups, in the surveys, is the need to focus more on the economy and jobs. It is so critical to all four counties in our region.
So you actually paid somebody to find out all that?
We did. We didn't do this in our spare time. Job. No, we actually partnered with a research firm out of Boston by the name of Mount Auburn Associates, right. And they did this work
for us.
Yeah. No, they've done a lot of work in the region. In fact, they were the firm that supported the Greater Capital Region in looking at the creative economy a couple of years ago. You might have talked about that report.
Oh, yeah.
It was released about a year and a half, 2 years ago. So jobs in the economy is really important. And I think there's some real strengths to build on in this region. You know, in Columbia County, obviously, the sustainable ag movement is so important. The other striking statistic around the economy is about 10% across the region, 10% of those engaged in the workforce across our region are self-employed. And I think that speaks to the large percentage that are involved in the creative economy. They're working artists, they're creative types. But that also represents those that are in the trades, those that are electricians and contractors. And those are such, you know, 10%, that's a major part of our economy, or those that are entrepreneurial, that are finding a way to work in a place that they love and they want to be.
Everybody in Hudson seems to have three jobs, especially the younger people, you know, waiting on table over here and being a barista. Is that what you call it?
That's what it's called, Ellen.
That's what they're called. And, you know, shop sitting and all kinds of things. They, you know, at that age, you can do that more easily. You know,
it is. I mean, and I think you see that not only here in Columbia County, but I think that you see that in lots of places where there is a high cost of living, is that you need to cobble together multiple incomes to make it work. I think, you know, younger people are able to do that a lot more than some older residents. And I think one of the findings that we found in kind of the jobs and economy section that I think, you know, again, is not a finding that's unique to Columbia County or this region, is that there's an increasing mismatch between the jobs that are available and the skill sets of the workforce.
One of the best local announcements is that Columbia Green might start a carpentry program, which is like, it's about time. The one thing you constantly hear locally is that there aren't skilled employees for the endless construction that goes on around here.
Yeah, I'm sure you've had Dee Dee Barrett on, represented Dee Dee Barrett on a number
I've
of times. and that's one of, you know, one of the things that that Dee Dee Barrett really is trying to press is that we do have industries here that have high demand and often not a supply of firms that are doing that work. So how can we be even smarter about identifying those sectors and creating programs like Columbia Green is doing to and these are good jobs. These are jobs that, you know, that pay, you know, good income.
Their nursing program is hugely successful.
Yeah. It is. There's some kind of outsourcing programs that are coming into Columbia County. For example, Rich Volo, remember, he had he worked for a bank in New York, and he brought part of the operation that he was in charge of up to Columbia County, hired three people. I don't know what the work was. It was sitting at a computer mm-hmm. doing something that the bank needed done. I find that an interesting kind of difference that's happening around here. Not in a big way, but it's, you know, beginning to happen.
Well, yeah. I think with increasing fast connectivity
that's
of information.
Right. Ongoing issue around here. And until we have better broadband, and it's going to be harder for some of these online type of jobs to take place here.
But I think it's a positive trend in terms of this region in the long term.
I hate to cut you off, but it's top of the hour. We got to do a bunch of business
and
here.
And we can come back after the news if we need to learn some more from you.
Well, I just,
so
you know,
stick
this
around.
This has been great fun, Tom and Ellen.
Sure?
I really appreciate
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Okay, if you say so, boss.
welcome to Chance to Stick Around. I want to hear the news, too.
Yeah, let me see if... Uh-oh, damn it. It should be here in a second. The this bug is driving me nuts. Well, it's not been posted yet. Ellen, keep talking, Ellen. Let me go see how our update's going on.
Okay, we're talking about job training. Also, restaurants are always saying they can't get good people. I mean, there needs to be training there.
For sure.
And I think if there were a good training program, the businesses themselves would pay to send somebody for training, maybe, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, you know, let me just put a little context around your example. You know, the food sector in the broader region, if you look at both, you know, the agriculture and the value-added processing and the restaurants and the outlets where food is sold, it's 12% mm-hmm. of our economy as a region.
Wow.
Government, all of government is 12%, Ellen. So wow. it's a major sector, and so it employs lots of people. And I think what is interesting about your example is that if you think back to what I shared before in terms of why young people, why people are thinking about moving, it is that it's expensive. But even before that, it's jobs, and it's also career opportunities. And mm-hmm. so how can you go into a food establishment, maybe start off as a waiter, but then go back, you know, through investments that the employer makes in training, see yourself as a manager in 2 or 3 years, or how you can see how that job can be a launch pad to do more. The healthcare industry is a great example, how you can maybe enter in at the hospital here with one job, and through professional development and training, you can move up within that organization. Mm-hmm. It is so important in terms of seeing those ladders of career advancement that young people want to see.
Right. Did you find the news, Tom?
It's coming, Ellen. It's coming. Just being uploaded.
Uploaded.
Continue talking.
I love it when you talk that tech talk.
Yeah. And we try to keep that stuff off the air, you know? But that's okay.
You don't want people to know the...
I don't think it's really that exciting to like say we're waiting. Exactly.
I'm curious. Okay. Do you ever take phone calls in for questions?
We do. But in fact, we take phone calls for all kinds of things, including pledges for this pledge drive show. We're still in our pledge drive. Call 697-7400 in the 518 area code. If you want to call in, you can call in, talk to Peter Taylor, or make a pledge, or do both. How about that, Ellen? Call in.
Do both at the same time. Peter Taylor, let me remind our listeners, or tell our new ones that have just tuned in, is the president of the Berkshire Taconic Community Foundation. And we're learning a lot from him about the inner workings of the foundation, but also the good work they're doing in really looking at what the needs are. And in many cases, we think we know the needs, but we need to spend more time figuring out how to solve the problems.
And what we're going to do, Ellen, just as you're still uploading the news there, Tom, is, mm-hmm. as I shared, we're going to be releasing these findings. We're going to be sending it out in hard copy to our constituencies, those that are on our mailing list. But we're also going to be making it available on our website. So for the listeners that are interested in learning more about what I'm talking about briefly here, it'll be available soon on our website by Monday at the latest. And so you can download a copy. And the other important dimension of what we're going to be doing is that this fall we are going to be hosting conversations in communities around these findings. And so there'll be another push of outreach to obviously alert people to both the report and to these community conversations this fall. But we want to gather residents together to hear not just a summary of the findings, but to hear from one another, what are the implications of these findings and what can we do together to address them?
Well, people are always trying to get other people together in this community. I mean, the whole outreach is a very interesting kind of problem to tackle.
What makes it interesting is the same people show up when you announce an outreach event. And very few people actually go and find the people that need to be talked to. Don't you agree, Ellen?
In a sense, that is correct.
You've gone to many of these things, and it's always the same folks.
The usual suspects, as we call ourselves. But there have been several meetings. There was a group of people, I guess, got together and said, we have to talk about affordable housing. You know, the good old word affordable. What do you mean by that? There's a phenomenon that is causing us to have more of a housing crisis than ever, which is that B&Bs are
you mean
Airbnbs. More and more of the Airbnbs.
Mm.
Airbnbs.
Yeah.
More and more of them are taking housing
year-round rentals offline.
That's right.
Absolutely.
That's right.
Here and everywhere.
At any rate, there have been several meetings, very interesting meetings with good people up there in front of the room.
Excuse me. I'm going to run the news. We haven't got the update yet, so I'm just going to run the regular news because it's past the hour and we should have run it a while back. So we'll be right back as soon as the news
is
over.
WGXC.
90.7 FM, ICRA. We're back with the Thursday afternoon show. I'm Tom DiPietro and Ellen Thurston, and we have our guest, Peter Taylor, who is president of the Berkshire Taconic Foundation, Community Foundation, who we've been talking to for the last hour. Ellen, you want to wrap this up?
Yes, I want to thank Peter for coming. We've learned a lot. And we're to learn more once your survey is unleashed.
And remind our listeners that to either get money or give money, go to BerkshireTaconicFoundation.com.
BerkshireTaconic.org.
BerkshireTaconic.org.
Yeah. And please, you know, I've been sharing a little sneak preview of the findings from our community assessment project. Those will be available on our website next week. And also we will be doing another round of outreach and press about this report in the fall, because it's our intention to bring residents together across our region to learn more about the findings and to explore together the implications and what we can do about it. So stay tuned. And, you know, this has been great fun, Ellen and Tom. I want to thank you for the invitation to be here. And I do want to give a shout out to your pledge drive. I mean, just being here in the chair talking to you, knowing that you are having conversations like this every week with individuals that are trying to do good work in the community, and also just sharing information that helps people benefit from living here, understand the services and the issues. This is really important infrastructure for the community. And so I want to give a shout out that every little bit helps to sustain these types of organizations.
Sure
Ellen
does.
And I were just talking at the break that one of the toughest dollars to raise if you're a nonprofit, and I'm sure there's some listeners out there, is just money for core operating support that helps organizations make sure that the heat and the light stays on, any light staff that they need, it can be paid, and so the mission can happen every day in the existing programs. And that's what you're raising with this pledge drive, is just money for that core operating support to allow shows like this to continue.
Thank you, Peter, and maybe we'll be able finally to buy a fly swatter.
Yeah. I thought you had a name for the fly that was here.
He's still here.
He's still here. Well,
thank you so much.
Out.
All right. Well, thanks for the invitation.